Coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk, ESPN's Eric Longenhagen breaks down the MLB draft and previews possible picks for the Phillies and the Nationals. We'll chat with Phillies top prospect Nick Williams and Nationals top minor league players Pedro Severino and Brian Goodwin. We'll talk with the Easton softball team about their season and head coach Ed McIntyre's 400th career coaching victory. And new WFMZ sports director Brian Salmon joins us for our roundtable debate on regional and national sports issues. All coming up on tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us. We have a jam-packed show with some outstanding guests talking about a lot of different topics on tonight's program. But first, everything starts with a man off to my right in his usual number one chair, the co-host of the program, Mr. Joseph Linwood
Craig.
Joe, how are you doing?
Good, Chris. Good, Chris. Ready to go.
Rumor is you're going to be the number one draft in the NBA lottery next month.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think I can jump anymore. I never could jump.
I think you can defend a little bit better than Simmons.
Oh, I can defend. Well, you got to learn to use your body a little bit.
All right. We'll talk NBA draft in a future edition of RCN Sports Talk, but we are close to the NBA, the Major League Baseball draft that is just around the corner. And once again, this year, we are very happy to bring in former Catasauqua product and now with ESPN, Eric Longenhagen, who's been doing an outstanding job on all the potential draft picks in the Major League Baseball draft. Eric joins us via Skype. Eric, welcome to RCN Sports Talk once again.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing? We appreciate you spending some time with us.
I'm doing well. Thank you. Yeah, any time for you guys.
I know that you've been very busy with the draft, and I know in years past we asked you about, all right, who's going to go 1, 2, and 3, and then who's left over for the Phillies and Nationals and Yankees and Mets to pick over. We don't have to worry about this year. I know one national sports writer was mad at the Sixers the other day for being fortunate enough or being happy to have the number one pick. But one of the side effects of having a bad year, of course, is to get that number one pick. What are some of the names you're hearing about that Phillies fans should be concerned with?
Well, what we're hearing is that they don't know just yet. I mean, the names at the top of the draft are pretty much decided. The Phillies haven't picked one of them yet. You know, obviously the local, semi-local kid that you guys may have heard about there is Jason Groom. Mm-hmm. Left-handed pitcher at Barnegat High School over in New Jersey, who has tremendous stuff, but some off-the-field questions. And the track record for the last, you know, 5-10 years of high school pitchers going early isn't so good. And then there's A.J. Puck, a big left-handed pitcher down at Florida, who's been inconsistent this spring, but has tremendous stuff as well. And then they're also considering some of the college bats, like Corey Ray at Louisville, even high school bat like Mickey Moniak out in San Diego is someone who's They've sent some guys to see some of the heavy hitters in the organization in the front office. So there's just sort of a short list of names right now, and none of them is especially concrete to go 1-1.
Yeah, I know a couple of those names you mentioned, too, we've been hearing a lot about, including Groom from New Jersey, A.J. Puck, mm-hmm. a left-hander out of Florida. I want to ask you about Puck first and foremost, because I heard a lot of great reviews. He has a plus fastball, plus curve, plus slider. Control has been an issue for him, and also he's had some issues with back spasms. Has that been a concern? And, you know, you have two red flags there. They might be small red flags, but still, are those major concerns and enough to sway the Phillies away from picking him number one?
Well, I know for me that I'm a little lower on Puck than the rest of the industry seems to be. Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned the back issues, you know, just the way his delivery works, the way the mechanics are, there's not a whole, he doesn't get over his front side very well. He doesn't get on top of those breaking balls consistently. It's why he sort of lived up and out of the strike zone a little bit this year. But we were saying the same thing about Carlos Rodon from North Carolina State a few years ago. He had back issues. He had stiffness. He had a sort of a physical, thick, mature body, not very projectable. And now, you know, he's in the big leagues a few years later, and he looks just fine. So, yes, I think there are some concerns about Puck, and the things that you've alluded to certainly have impacted his consistency. But, you know, the stuff is the stuff, and you said it, it's mid-90s with feel for two-plus breaking balls. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you take that 1-1 and you're confident he's healthy, you're confident in his athleticism and his body, which is, you know, a little bit atypical for a big league starter, then it's justifiable. But, yeah, there are certainly concerns.
I know there's nothing written in stone, and every year is different. The players are different. Teams that are selecting the number one pick is different. But just as a general rule of thumb, what do you kind of look at, and what do most teams normally look at in terms of judging college athletes versus high school athletes, especially with those higher picks? I know the Phillies the last couple of years, they seem to have had some different theories on what they want in the draft. And I know Matt Klintak also has kind of said, you know, in certain ways, we look for pitchers, and in certain areas, we look for hitters at a high school to groom pitchers more through the college level. But, of course, you know, that can change depending on the different players that are available. But is there a common kind of rule as teams look at whether to draft college athletes first or high school athletes first?
You know, it depends on how risk-averse the people making the decisions are. Obviously, you know, just if you're a college athlete, if you're a college junior or a draft-eligible sophomore, or if even you return for your senior year, you're just, the cement is closer to being dry on your body. You've had 4 years of college to get injured or not, if that was sort of a predestined thing for your body to do. So there's just sort of generally less risk among college athletes. You know, high school athletes, it's important. This upcoming summer in July and August is when a lot of the heavy evaluation will be done for next year's draft. Mm-hmm. Because Jason Groom is striking out, you know, 15, 20 guys every time out because he's playing high school baseball in New Jersey. Whereas later this summer we'll have the showcases where he'll be up against the other elite peers from players will be up against elite peers from their class, just a better barometer for their skills to see them against the other best players from around the country. And there's more stability on the college end for that as well. If you're pitching in the SEC, the level of competition is pretty uniform. It's pretty solid. But if you're, you know, a high school kid from Michigan who they don't even have enough, you know, they play seven-inning games and they start with 1-1 counts because they don't have enough pitching to get through an actual game, I think that sort of changes things. So it is apples to oranges, and it's a difficult thing to gauge and just sort of cast a wide net across the whole country in Puerto Rico and figure out who to slot where.
Eric, Joe Craig here. It's good to have you with us. Thanks for being with us. I wanted to ask you this as in regards to both the Phillies and the Nationals. The Phillies especially right now have a lot of good young pitchers in their system. It's starting to show up with the Iron Pigs and certainly with the Phillies in Philadelphia right now. Yet they have a real lack of power hitters, especially up in Philly. Do you think possibly the Phillies will go with somebody like Nick Senzel or Kyle Lewis, guys that are known for hitting with power, maybe before they go for a pitcher like Groom?
Yeah, I think in general, especially towards the top of the draft, teams aren't necessarily drafting for need. Just because the time between when you draft somebody and when they reach the majors is 3, 4, 5 years. And in that amount of time, you might have had the opportunity to acquire something to fill a hole or someone from your farm system that's already there pops up. So just best player available is generally how these major league teams go about their business early on in the draft. And that's just for the first few rounds before you just need to take a catcher to fill in here or there throughout your system. I do think that Senzel and Lewis are in play at 1 and 2, especially 2. Kyle Lewis has been linked pretty heavily to the Reds at number 2, and there is big power there, especially with Lewis. Senzel was out here in Arizona for 4 games early in the year, and you know, there's above average plus raw power. It doesn't necessarily always come out in games, although I do like Senzel. So I would think that if they end up taking a bat, it would be someone like Ray, although you know, I think there's a non-zero chance that Lewis and Senzel are there as well. But it would be because the Phillies think that they're the best player, not because they think that they need power at the major league level.
Now, of course, the Nationals did a pretty good job picking Bryce Harper a couple years ago with that being a power hitter, and we all know about him. What do you think the Nationals are – what situation are they in? We talked about the Phillies' needs. What about the Nationals?
Well, you know, they pick with consecutive picks late in the first round at 28 and at 29, and so they could – you know, be involved in all sorts of shenanigans there. just manipulating their bonus pools for the draft, try to see if they can get somebody more talented at 28 or 29 than they would otherwise been able to get. So right. If they use one of those two picks on someone cheap and sign them to a nice, fat, underslot deal, then they might be able to call someone who would otherwise go at 13, 14, 15 and say to their agent, we have $2.5 million waiting for you back at pick 28. How about you tell everybody between now and when we pick that you're not taking anything less than that, and we'll give you a cool $2.5 million back at pick 28. So they could do something like that. Also look for one of the high school arms to fall to them. There's a lot of high school arms in this draft.
Right.
That are worthy of first-round consideration. They all can't go in the first round. So some are going to fall towards the back of that the first round, and somebody might fall into Washington's lap, like Jesus Luzardo from Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida. He has Tommy John surgery. Maybe would have been a mid-first-round pick had he been healthy. So look for the Nationals to do something kind of tricky back there at the end of the first round. They haven't shied away from taking injured pitchers in the past with Eric Fetty and Matt Perk. So there could be something unique happening there.
And they could also take a possibility of looking up to move up in the draft. I mean, they've got they're pretty solid ball club, and their minor leagues are pretty well stocked. So I would look that they could possibly move up too. Let me ask you about one other pitcher. That would be and I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but I think it's Riley Pint, I believe.
Pint.
Pint. Okay, I was right. Chris and I talked about that. I thought it was Pint, but he said it was Pint, so I'm putting that one on him. Tell me a little bit about Riley Pint. What do you see there?
Well, quite simply, he's the hardest throwing high school pitcher of all time. He's been up to 102 in workouts, and he's been doing that since his junior year. And, you know, again, the track record of high school pitching early in the draft lately is not good. Mm-hmm. And with someone who throws this hard, who's got some violence to their delivery like Pint does, there's considerable risk there. Groom does it easy. It's like he's playing catch at 94, 96.
Right.
Pint, there's effort, there's violence in the head and around the shoulders that you kind of worry about. But he's an athletic kid, and he might be Justin Verlander, or he might never get out of Double-A because he breaks when he's 19 or 20 and leaves 4 or 5-plus miles an hour on the operating room table.
Yeah.
At ESPN, we're a little lower on Pint than you might see with other publications just because of the way we've assessed that risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would imagine, too, being a young guy, the throwing, it's such a, you know, the body's only going to take, can only take so much. I think everybody is, we finally come to realize that with pitchers in baseball nowadays. So, you know, the body can only take so much. When you're that young and you're throwing that hard, you know, it's questionable as to how long it's going to last.
Yep. Our special guest is Eric Longenhagen from ESPN, breaking down the Major League Baseball draft with us. You know, I want to get back to the Phillies for just a second. And I know we've ripped Ruben Amaro 8 ways to Sunday since the last few years, too. I think where he made his biggest mistake was in the draft. He went for a lot of high school athletes. And I know his theory was, well, they were good at the time. They were trying to build something for the future. They got a lot of young prospects and hope that some of them came through and didn't pick a whole lot of college athletes early in the draft. Do you think there needs to be, going forward, a little bit more of a mix or a combination, not just so heavy in one or the other?
I think there's something to be said for diversification. Yeah, I mean, it's just like your investment portfolio or anything like that. You know, part of the reason that the farm system hasn't really yielded anything for the Phillies of late is because those years when they were competing, prospects were dealt away, Travis d'Arnaud and Anthony Gost. Now, none of those guys have especially been great big leaguers or anything, but they are big leaguers and contributors. So, you know, some of the reasons that the farm system hasn't yielded anything isn't necessarily because the drafts haven't been good, although they haven't. Marty Wolliver, who was the scouting director at the time, has been let go. So there's a new regime in there. I think with Klentak running things, they're going to be a little bit more analytical, a little bit more, I think, you know, up from zero analytics with Amaro in the front office. So there's just more information. And, yeah, I do think that you'll see them lean toward college players earlier, more frequently than they did under Amaro.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about was the money and how it works here in the draft, because it's not like you can just go out and you have an unlimited resource that you can spend. In fact, one of the rumors going around the Delaware Valley is that the Phillies may shy away from someone like A.J. Puck and go for a high school player that traditionally you spend less money on. But can you talk about how the money works in the draft? And, you know, some teams like the Nationals, they're looking to kind of spread their money out over their draft, whereas some other teams like the Phillies or the Reds or some of the teams that are picking first may be more adverse to going and spending a lot of money early in the round. But how does that shake out as far as money available for teams?
So everybody gets a pool that Major League Baseball determines sort of in an inverse way of their record. And then, of course, there are compensatory picks that add and subtract to how much money you can spend throughout your draft. But you have a set limit that you can spend in the first 10 rounds, and the penalties are pretty severe if you go over, which is why you haven't seen teams do that yet. There are times when teams will, like the Cubs did with Kyle Schwarber, they'll take somebody earlier than maybe they were projected to go and cut an underslot deal and then reallocate some of that savings to other picks. Like the Phillies, slot value at number one overall is like $9 million. Whoever they take number one isn't going to get a $9 million bonus. So whatever that they agree to sign that player for, the savings they can take and roll that back onto some of their later picks. Now, in a draft like this, where there's not really a clear-cut number one guy, that's a great strategy. Mm-hmm. But the Phillies don't pick again until 42, and the Padres, the Cardinals, and the Reds have several picks. Between the Phillies' two picks, and it'd be really hard to know that you're going to be able to get somebody back at 42 that you otherwise wouldn't have, because those teams might be able to snatch up someone talented that's falling because of signability. I would say that the Padres are the most likely to do some financial manipulating in this year's draft. And I wouldn't be surprised if, especially with the international free agency, with Storer works the same way, that we see a huge overhaul to the way these systems are governed when we have the next collective bargaining agreement negotiations.
Right, Eric, let me ask you one more. This will test you a little bit. Foreign players, Caribbean players, guys from South America, what's on the horizon? Any players there that are possibilities to be up there in the top 10 that you're aware of?
Well, international free agency is its own thing. It's a separate entity from the draft.
Right.
Puerto Rico falls under the draft's umbrella. That's fairly recent. And there were actually some whispers that the draft sort of killed baseball in Puerto Rico for a little while, although this year's class is very strong. As far as, the Phillies have one of the more robust international pools coming up for this July 2nd period, so they can sign some of those guys. This year's international class, as far as the Phillies go, nothing's official yet, but the Braves are the team. The Braves and Padres are the two teams that are going to make big splashes internationally this year, with Kevin Maitan, a Venezuelan shortstop who scouts have been on since he was 14, is like a sort of generational type player in some people's eyes, getting some Miguel Cabrera comparisons to this kid. Right. The Braves are all over that. He's going to sign probably with them. I'd be glad to come back on in a month or so and talk about who the Phillies might be on from the Dominican and Cuba and Venezuela. But as of right now, it seems like the Braves and Padres are the major players there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Eric, last two questions from me. You've been doing an amazing job covering all these teams on ESPN, tracking down different athletes. And my first question is, how long is it and how much work is it to track down different people? And, you tweet out clips of players, which is great to see people from all around the country. But my second part of the question was from one of your articles on ESPN Insider, that you recently spent a weekend traversing South Carolina looking at two of the top center fielders, Blake Rutherford and Mickey Moniak. What was it like traversing Southern California? Stories from Southern Cal.
I drove here from Tempe to Sherman Oaks, which is north of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And that was about 6 hours. And I was with a buddy of mine who writes for Baseball America and does some freelance photography named Bill Mitchell. Bill and I keep each other company on these road trips. And then when we wanted to double back to go east for a minor league game that night between the Padres and between the Dodgers and I forget who it was at this point. I mean, the Dodgers single A affiliate in Rancho Cucamonga took 2 hours because of Los Angeles traffic. You know, the cars, the sun, the oceanside freeways, it's all gorgeous. And you have plenty of time to stare around and look at it because you're sitting in traffic most of the time. it's an interesting life. I just actually I'll be leaving ESPN in a few weeks after the draft to become the lead prospect analyst over at Fangraphs.com and do even more traveling. Now I'll be going to the Dominican and stuff like that. For someone from Catasauqua, looking around and seeing stuff like that, it does put things in perspective and is life changing at times depending on where you are and what you're seeing. But it's just a lot of baseball, really. Every baseball field, from home to first base is 90 feet, and that's where I find my comfort. That's where I find my solace, no matter where I am.
See, I was looking for a Kardashian or a Beyonce story when I asked you about Southern Cal. All this baseball stuff wasn't what I was going for. Now, Eric, thanks so much for joining us. I know your time is very valuable this time of year, but we really appreciate your insights and continued success to you with Fangraphs.
Thank you, Chris, Joe. Have a good show, guys.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you very much. Eric Longenhagen from ESPN really does an outstanding job on the ESPN website. And, you can follow him on Twitter. Has a lot of great insights
on baseball.
All right. Quick reminder, we have one of our special Buffalo Wild Wings shows coming up next week. The first of four special shows that we're going to be doing once again here in the summer of 2016 as Sports Talk Gets Wild. Next week's show will be to benefit the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I'm so happy that RCN once again is on board to donate money to our local charities. You can pick up a dine and donate coupon, and a portion of your meal will be going to the different charities as we go through the summer months. More information on the RCN TV website, rcn.com/RCNTV. Next week's guests will be the Emmaus Green Hornets field hockey team, the state champions led by Sue Butt-Staven, and a lot of talkers, she tells me. Some really great stories from her young players this year on another state championship for the Hornets. And I know Emmaus people, they're always saying, hey, we need more Emmaus people on Sports Talk. We want to see more Emmaus stories. Now's your chance to go out there. You can talk about Emmaus sports in person.
Join us. Buffalo Wild Wings
on Grape Street in Whitehall, right in front of the Whitehall Mall. And again, check out the website for more information on next week's show and our shows throughout the summer months. Time for our first feature of the evening, and we have interviews with both Nationals and Phillies top prospects. The Nationals top prospects coming up in a moment, but right now we talk about the highly discussed Phillies outfield prospect, Nick Williams, currently the second highest prospect rated in the organization. We ask him about his time in Texas, transitioning to the East Coast, and on what he needs to do to get a major league call-up.
What was spring training like this year, looking back and now a month into the season? Were there any things that stuck out in your mind or things you learned from the veterans at spring training that you still remember here in May?
Being here extra close to the big leagues, just really control what you can control and have fun no matter where you are, because in the end it's not up to us. They'll know when we're ready, so therefore just have fun and play the game.
You're over a month into the season. Could you talk about the adjustment from going to AA to AAA?
Just the park's a lot nicer up north, but really, I say age, but I always see the same game, just guys a little smarter here.
What was that adjustment like going from the West Coast, coming to Reading and playing in the Eastern League last year?
It was way better hitting in Reading, but in Texas, it was 110 every day, really hot. And then started this year, I've never played in a game, I don't think, under 50 degrees, so that was a big shocker. And a wild stage for me, but I had to adjust, and I can say that I played in weather like this before.
Dave Brundage has kind of been moving you around, playing left, center field, right field. Could you talk about making that adjustment? Do you have a favorite, or is it tough switching back and forth from day to day?
I play left mostly my whole career. Last year I played center the whole year, but right's a little it just feels a little different because I don't play there a whole bunch, but the corners. Well, right's really easy, center's really easy. Left field is, they always say, the hardest, but I feel extremely comfortable left. It keeps me it keeps my attention there because the ball's curve and knuckle, all kinds of things like that. So I feel like it keeps me more engaged in the game rather than center. You just run and be athletic and go get it and right. Balls stay a lot true there too. So I don't know, I like left just because it keeps me on my heels.
You have a great blend of speed and power. Do you kind of envision yourself as more a power hitter, or you know, when you get to the majors, are you looking at yourself as a leadoff hitter, a two hitter, middle of the order? What do you envision for yourself?
Well, so far, you know, I haven't hit a lot of homers or extra base hits, but that'll come. Just right now, you know, just getting comfortable and just figuring out myself a lot and just really getting comfortable with everything. But I see myself as anywhere. I'll hit anywhere, leadoff, third, second, fourth, it doesn't matter. I feel like my back can play any of those spots. So,
who's been the toughest pitcher you faced in the International League so far?
I haven't really seen one yet that really, I was like, they're all basically throwing the same. Just depends on lefty or righty, but so far it's been pitchers.
So lefties, I know there's a couple of lefties that have like jerky motions or come almost sidearm, so that hasn't affected you at all?
No, a lot of them have been wild. I don't even say affected wild, just a lot of them just been here and there. So, and a lot of lefties all have this throw the same. So I think we faced one maybe sidearmer that's, you know, you have to prepare, like just maybe see a couple of pitches. But a lot of lefties, they've been around the same.
Anything you're looking to do here over the next couple months and, you know, hopefully get a call-up soon?
Really just be consistent and do whatever I can to help my team win. In the end, you know, winning is everything. But really just have fun, you know, enjoy the process and hopefully stay consistent and get better.
Is it nice coming to a system that's kind of in rebuilding mode and they're looking for players like yourself to be the core of the future as opposed to Texas where it was more of a, you know, there was veterans and you had to probably knock off someone to get a spot?
Yeah, with the whole Rangers thing, it just, they got, when I got drafted, it was like they were good and then they got like Chu and a lot of, and then they got Hamilton back. So I really felt like I was playing for nothing and I was just there to just play baseball. But now I feel like I actually have something to work towards and there's a prize at the end, so it's a lot better and more comforting here.
Do you keep close tabs on the Phillies and what they're doing, and just in case, you know, you're ready to when you get the call up, you know exactly what's going on with it?
I was earlier when the first season started and seeing like a lot of struggle and stuff like that, but I feel like it affected me more just seeing that, making me try harder. So no, you know, when the game's on, I'll watch it just to see how the team's doing. But other than that, I try to keep my vision here and getting better.
Thanks so much for your time. Continue. Yeah, good luck this year.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Time for the RCN Sports Talk trivia question tonight. 25 years ago this season, Ricky Henderson established the Major League Baseball existing record for career stolen bases. Within 50, what was his final stolen base total? So we're going to give you a little leeway, but this is a tough question. Ricky Henderson, 25 years ago, retired, establishing the all-time Major League Baseball record for stolen bases. Within 50, what was his final total? And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
And once again, tonight's trivia question, Ricky Henderson established the Major League Baseball record for stolen bases 25 years ago. Within 50, what was his final stolen base total? Our second feature of the evening, two of the top prospects in the Nationals organization are in AAA, and they are catcher Pedro Severino and outfielder Brian Goodwin. Our Sports Talk cameras caught up with both players to ask them about their careers and about their futures with the Washington Nationals, starting with Severino's thoughts on his brief but successful first appearance with the Nationals.
I mean, it was great for me because I'm just working hard, and this is my goal, like a goal to DC, you know. So it was great because it was a great time for me because it was, for my family too, it was like the best.
What was it like to get that start and you get your first hit right away?
You know, I was in the bullpen, you know, like normally catch a couple pens and know all the pitchers over there. So, and they call me like a pinch hit for the pitcher in the last inning. And I just was so happy, like, I'm taking one at bat in big league right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think too much. I just try to see the ball and hit the ball, and that's what I do.
I know other pitchers have said they love you calling their game. So how is that to build that relationship and that rapport where pitchers really like throwing to you?
You know, the first thing is, like, you have to know all your pitching stuff. And we're trying to be on the same page every time in the game. So that's why things like we call a good game.
What was the toughest adjustment you had to make going from single A to double A and triple A? What was the biggest jump?
The biggest jump was when I played rookie league 2012. So they gave me the noise like I go to High Hagerstown.
Yeah.
So I just feel so happy. I just play every day. I just play once a week, and I just still work hard, and they make me like a starting catcher.
Do you keep an eye on what the Nationals are doing? Do you check on the internet how they're doing, or do you just not worry about them at all right now?
I mean, I think they check everybody. You know, they got an old report, everybody, every level. So they have to know what I'm doing, what are they doing, you know. So I think they check it out.
Any specific things you're going to be working on the next couple of weeks or month here until you get called up?
Not really. They know what I got, and, you know, they know I can play. I can play everywhere, big league, triple A, whatever. So they just put in the field and plays baseball.
First week you had a tough week weather-wise and getting started, but since then both you and as a team have been very hot.
Yeah, I think we're still looking for the weather to warm up a little, but I mean we just keep playing hard as if it was our last day, and just going out and giving everything we have.
How much of a confidence boost was it to have so much success in the Venezuelan League, and how much did that carry over?
I think it was huge. I think going over there and having to figure out a different, just being in a different surrounding and setting and out of my comfort zone, I think it helped to help me to come over here and adjust and find some ways to get myself comfortable and ready to play back in the States.
How tough was it coming back off your injury, getting back into a flow and you know, just the everyday routine?
It was pretty tough. It was a lot of hard work, a lot of training and rehabbing and exercises, but I had a lot of people that were positive and helped to push me and helped me to stay on top of everything. And I think just having that support helped me to come back even better. I think just being comfortable. Being around a bunch of guys that like to have fun, that work hard, and really put a lot of value into winning. And I think that helps to bring out the best, and not just me, but everybody on the team.
And as far as outfield positions, are you comfortable in all three positions?
Yes, sir. Definitely. I think we spent a lot of time out in the outfield and BP and getting reads off the bat and taking ground balls and fly balls in multiple positions. So I think so. Yes.
Any specific thing you're looking to work on over the next couple weeks or the next month or so, whenever you get the call up?
Just keep on keeping on with everything I got going now. Just making sure I pay, I guess, as much attention to detail as possible, and not letting my focus or attention sway.
And now, here's more RCN Sports Talk.
There we go. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special guest for segments 3 and 4 of tonight's program, Brian Salmon, new sports director at Channel 69 WFMZ, who has a great career, some great stories to tell. Brian, thanks for joining us and for leaving your day job for a little bit, coming here and then driving back up the road to go back to Channel 69.
I had to come. Thanks for the offer. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I wanted to ask you, because you've been, you know, even during the break here, you've been telling us some great stories about your background, New Orleans, Boston, Washington. Tell us a little bit to our audience, a little bit about your background.
Well, the background is extensive. I've been a lot of different places. I'm from out west, born in California. Oakland, so I'm loving the Warriors right now playing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pulling for them that game last night.
Oh, Joe
night.
Just got
it.
On their bandwagon
Steph
last
Curry,
year.
Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Steph Curry, best player in the league.
I could not agree with you more.
He wasn't saying that a year ago.
But, of course he wasn't, even though he was the MVP, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Everyone has a fault. Yeah. So born in California. Both of my parents are from Philadelphia, so that's mm-hmm. kind of my tie to coming to the Lehigh Valley. Mm-hmm. But I've worked in some of the best cities, most iconic cities in the country, in my opinion. Worked in Las Vegas, Boston, New Orleans. I started off in Montana.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was that like?
You know what? Honestly, the nicest people of anywhere I've ever been in the Lehigh Valley is now rivaling that. Because I've really, truly, honestly met some very, very nice people since I've been here.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. What's the biggest thing you've learned? You've only been here a few weeks, too. So you got Catasauqua and Emmaus.
Catasauqua,
and some of these
yes. Guys. Yeah. I can pronounce it. I can actually spell it. I just typed it in before I came in out here. So, yeah.
Well, Reading was another one. Harry Callis, the late, great Harry Callis. He had
Reading.
A problem with yeah, you call him Reading.
Call it Reading.
No one's going to correct him, though.
Exeter. I feel like I say it okay, but I got an email from someone the other day. Right. And they thought I was saying Exeter. Someone's listening too closely, but I mean
tomatoes that's not, and tomatoes. Don't worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
That's probably Joe. He likes to heckle
nah,
media personalities.
Yeah. Who cares what that pronunciation
I got my good eye on you.
You
got
to learn about Joe. Stay away from him. His predictions are wrong 95% of the time.
Wow.
His information's wrong 85%.
Where does this come from?
I'm trying to help him out so he knows what, you know, to stay away from you.
Oh, my God.
You know, one of the great things you've done, too, is announcing the Iron Pigs games on Saturdays on Channel 69,
yeah.
which people can see on RCN Dial Position 7. You know, baseball, and I know a lot of people that have said this over the years, baseball is one of, if not the hardest of the major sports to announce because you got to be conversational and keep it interesting, and then snap, you're interesting. And you've done a great job with those games so far.
Man, I guess you've gotten the check that I sent you. I appreciate you saying that. I've done 2 games thus far. I have a game this Saturday,
yep.
so against Toledo. But, no, thank you. I really appreciate it. I grew up a baseball fan. So, you know, in California, baseball was my first love. I'm from the same town that CC Sabathia is from.
Oh, okay.
So he's from Vallejo, California, baby. I gotta give it up. So, I grew up playing baseball. I played shortstop all through high school. So, I know baseball. This first time I've ever announced it, though. I've done football. I've done basketball. I worked in Vegas, so I did boxing. I've done MMA. I'd never done baseball before.
That's surprising because baseball is a hard sport to fake. If you don't really know it and you don't, you know, love the game, it's hard to announce it.
No, I know the game, but I just never announced it. And you're right, it is different. Yeah. It's a lot different than doing the other sports because it's slow. So you got to tell boring stories. I got plenty of them.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite between announcing and reporting and anchoring? What do you like to do the best?
You know what? Honestly, I've been a weekend guy for most of my career, except for one of the stations I was at, mm-hmm. which allows you to anchor, which is good, but also allows you to go out and report.
Yeah.
And I like to report because I like to meet people. I like to talk to people. So, like my first day on the air at 69, I was over at Coca-Cola Park.
Yeah.
And it was a day right after they had sat me down and kind of interviewed me and, you know, hey, where are you from, sort of a thing. And that next day, I said, say 15 people came up to me, like, hey, I saw you on the news. Welcome to Lehigh Valley. Yeah. I literally had more people recognize me from that day than the entire time I was in Boston. Seriously, it was great. I mean,
it was different atmosphere.
Yeah.
Different
it's
atmosphere.
Different. Yeah. But reporting's fun. I've gotten a chance to do a lot of different. I got a chance to take batting practice at Fenway Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I played basketball inside the garden.
Did you hit the green wall?
I could say I did. And you'd never know the difference.
No, I wouldn't know anyway. I trust you.
Joe has the best fish stories. Joe has the best fish stories.
That's one of the big lies in the world.
He caught one this big and then
oh yeah, they get bigger every year.
There you go.
Just like you change allegiances to schools when their winning percentage.
No.
I like you too.
My allegiances are to 2 high schools.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Someone said
you brought up Northwestern for the first time in 11 years last.
Liberty. I'm a graduate of Parkland.
Okay.
But way back.
You're a Trojan.
When it was a little school.
You like that? Yeah, you pull that.
My teaching career and my athletic directorship was all at Liberty for
many
years.
Can I ask Brian
years.
Another question? Or I'm
done. Sorry. All right. I give up. I'm done.
I know it's early. Before we get to the roundtable, too, I want to get your thoughts on a lot of different sports issues. But I know it's early.
You better do it.
What is the biggest difference between the Lehigh Valley, the Eastern Pennsylvania region, and some of the areas you've been in? What's the biggest?
The biggest difference, right off the bat, I'd never covered lacrosse.
That's pockets here. Of information.
Yeah. You know what? Also, I never covered lacrosse. I know lacrosse. I know a little bit about lacrosse, and I had never covered men's or boys' volleyball. Hmm. So those are two things. Yeah, I'd never covered either of those two, and I've done highlights of both of them. Yeah. So,
lacrosse is a late bloomer here in the Valley. Okay. It's been over around the rest of the country.
New Jersey, it's huge.
Upstate New York.
It's new here.
Okay.
And volleyball is very good, too. The Parkland boys and girls volleyball team is very good. Joe tries to take credit for those teams, too.
Yeah. You know who just won last night? They won the EPC,
Well, they're some defending state champions. Yep. They won a state title last year.
He'll keep bringing up he's an alumni until they lose.
Parkland volleyball.
Until they start asking for money.
Volleyball. Boys volleyball is big in the spring. Wait till fall, and you see how big it is in the girls' side. Girls play in the fall in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it's huge.
Don't even try to say you know about volleyball.
Well,
lacrosse.
It is.
I struggle with basketball.
I was volleyball chairman.
He talks about like Ted Cruz about the basketball ring.
The basketball ring. No, I know about volleyball.
Okay.
Right. Let's save a clip of that.
All right, we'll move on.
All right, time for the roundtable part of our show. The roundtable is where we have a variety of local, regional, and national sports topics about a whole lot of different issues. Looking for an entertaining exchange of thoughts and opinions on different issues. And Brian, as you'll find out, Joe's usually wrong with his answers to these two as well. Topic number one.
You're like a married couple.
It is. We're the odd couple. We're the original odd couple.
Okay.
That's about 30 years after the show came out.
But yeah. Well, we've been around for a while.
Neil Simon on line one. Were you happy with Sam Bradford's press conference and his alleged apology? Everyone thought he was going to apologize and say, I fell on my sword, and he threw his agent under the bus.
Oh, wow.
And he said a lot of me and I, and it's my team, and I wanted this and that. A lot of first-person narratives in his so-called apology speech.
Yeah.
But your thought about his press conference the other day.
First thing, I think it was smart to throw the agent under the bus, because who cares about the agent? The
Nobody
fans
likes
can't
that
boo.
Agent anyway.
Yeah, the fans can't boo the agent. You're not going to, they can't throw batteries at him. So it's good to kind of throw the agent under the bus. But I kind of side with Michael Bennett, who kind of talked about Sam Bradford, and just like, really, man, you're upset that you have to compete, $40 million to compete. So I the apology was somewhat hollow, but I do like the fact that he threw the agent under the bus. He said, I was just following his lead, but I'm back. Yeah. Please love me.
Eagle homer, Joe Craig, what do you think about your quarterback?
I wasn't disappointed with his response. I thought he did take ownership on it. He said his feelings were hurt. He basically said his feelings were hurt, and he walked away. That's an honest answer. I mean, he didn't have to say that. I was okay with what he said. I took the approach when it happened that, hey, you remember my tirade here about grow up, Sam.
Yes.
You guys getting paid $23 million. Go out there next and show everybody they didn't need to draft this young guy.
That's all you got
to
do.
That's all he has to do. Yeah. And I think hopefully he sees that picture. But I think he wants out, and I expect he will be out.
Of course he does.
And I expect he will be out.
And Joe has bought Super Bowl tickets for his Eagles for the last 25 years.
I'm a diehard, man.
All right, before we have our last break of the evening, let's go to the phone line. Steve from Allentown wants to take a shot at our trivia question. Steve, welcome to Sports Talk.
Thanks.
Hi, how are you doing this evening?
Good, how are you guys?
We're doing good.
Doing great.
All right.
You're going to take a shot at our trivia question. Ricky Henderson, stolen bases.
I believe it's 1406.
You nailed it.
You got
right
it right
on
the button.
Now, did you happen to have that memorized?
Yeah, I literally acted like, I think it might be somewhere around 1406.
I'm a big Ricky Henderson fan. So.
Oh, you are, Just like Brian, who grew up.
Brian, right next to us, is also a big Ricky Henderson fan.
Yes. Yeah. Watched him as a kid in Oakland, California. So I used to go to the Coliseum as a kid. I told Jim this story the other day. He waved at me at one of the games I went to when I was on Cloud 9.
You were on Cloud 9,
I was a little kid out in left field.
All right, Steve, thanks so much. Great job nailing that answer. We'll be in contact with you after the show about the prize.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you. Take it easy. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with Brian Salmon, the new sports director at WFMZ Channel 69, just a moment. Right now, our final feature of the evening, and longtime softball coach Ed McIntyre captured his 400th coaching victory earlier this month. We talked with Coach Mack and his Easton softball players about that milestone and also about their thoughts on a very wild softball season.
It felt really good to be the team that contributed to giving him his 400th win.
400 wins, it was a nice accomplishment. I had an opportunity to look back and after the game was over and when I was at home, have an opportunity to think about all the different players I had and all the coaches. They should get the credit because they did all the work. I just happened to write a lineup, and kids went out and played very well for me.
Everyone was really excited. A couple of the players dumped a whole cooler of water on his head afterwards. I think in the beginning of the season, he knew he was pretty close, and then once it got closer, we all realized how close it was, and we really wanted to help out and give him his 400th win.
Playing for Coach Mack for his 400th win makes us like all feel proud because we're a part of a milestone that he's been through.
I'm looking forward to seeing how our girls go out and participate. If they have the passion and the energy, I think they're a very good team. I think they caused a lot of problems for our opponents. It's going to be interesting to see what we can accomplish.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, final segment of our show this evening. And thanks to all of our guests, Eric Longenhagen from ESPN joining us during segment one. Brian Salmon, new sports director at WFMZ Channel 69, joining us here for our last segment. Continuing on with the roundtable, we're going to go to the NBA. Topic number two.
Oh, yes.
The big conversation, of course, among Sixer fans and all of the NBA. Who's going to get the number one pick, Simmons, Ingram, or, and I just heard this a few hours ago, legendary head coach John Chaney. Yeah. Said he thinks the Sixers should trade down, get the fifth pick, and go for a guy like Buddy Hield from Oklahoma, who's a great shooter, can run the floor a little bit. When John Chaney says something like that, I got to think about it. But I like to start Chaney. With you.
I actually just said that exact same thing to someone at work the other day. You know, because someone was saying that they should take Buddy Hield. You don't take Buddy Hield at the first pick. If you want him, you trade down and then get him. But I think they should go with Ben Simmons. I got a chance when I was in New Orleans to actually interview him and saw him when he came to LSU as a high school player.
Yeah.
He played a high school game down there. A great kid to talk to. I love him on the court. I think he'd do well there. Yeah. Although the other kid, Ingram, is a scorer.
Yeah. And the thing is, everyone who know these players say that Ingram is a better character guy, although I don't know how you can say that really. But
I mean, better character guy? I dealt with him just for that day, and he was in high school at the time. But he seemed like a good kid to me.
Yeah, I don't know how.
And I still talk to guys down in New Orleans who, you know, cover LSU and whatnot. I haven't heard anything bad about him.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because everyone's now an expert. They're like, well, Ingram does this, this, and this, and Simmons is this, this, and that. Yeah. And one of them is Joe Craig. Joe?
Oh, I think they ought to take Simmons. I think you take the best guy available, period. Yeah. And he's the best guy available.
There you go.
All right, topic number three. Who are the top two International League players right now? And Brian, of course, you've called a couple games, so you haven't seen all the teams yet, but who are the players that have caught your attention so far in the International League?
Wow. I have to go with Iron Pick players because those are the ones that I know the best. I mean, Tommy Joseph was one, but he's up doing well. Yeah. Got his first home run.
Isn't that a
great story? The other. Oh, man, he was a great guy. I only met him the one time, but he was a great kid to talk to. Yeah. Eflin was also a great kid to talk to. But as far as on the team right now, I mean, Knapp is doing pretty well. He had a little hit streak that was going. I would have had to go with Joseph if it weren't. Eflin, I think, is a very good pitcher as well.
Yeah, he pitched well the other night, too.
Alec Asher was doing well until they got hurt. I
mean, Zach Eflin is the guy. He can't stay down there much longer.
I agree.
He's really good. I saw him yesterday. I'll tell you, 6'6", and he throws the ball. I mean, what an arm.
Yeah.
He is, hands down, the best player I've seen this year.
Is that a guarantee? Wow. Joe Craig guarantee?
That's my feeling.
Because you also promised that Tommy Joseph would never make the majors. And
I never
John Mayberry Jr. was going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Never have we talked about Tommy Joseph on
All right,
this
by
show.
The way, Trey Turner's a guy to keep your eye on. National fans are going to love him. He's
LSU.
Top of the order guy. Yeah, he can bunt.
He
does
a
lot
of things. Oh, he's about baseball. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm thinking about football. Yeah. There's another Trey. There's like five Trey Turners.
Yeah, that's true.
In professional sports.
Topic number four. One NFC East quarterback you would like to have right now. I know Joe's going to pick one of the
That's
Eagles
easy.
Quarterbacks, but who are you going to go with, Brian?
Who has a ring in the NFC East?
The same guy I would take.
Exactly. I mean, how do you choose anyone other than him?
Manning. You got to take Manning.
So you'll find in this area, if you agree with Joe, things are not
good.
I agree
with the guy who's got two rings.
I'll be on your show anytime you want me.
There you go.
Give me a call. We'll have a great time.
What about Tony Romo, Joe?
No, Tony Romo's too injury prone. Tony Romo's days, he's
good.
A good quarterback,
his back is healthy.
I am telling you, his days are numbered.
Until it's not.
Days are numbered.
So then another stone cold luck.
Days are numbered. He won't get through this year another injury. That's right, my belief.
That's not a bad bet. Oh. Give him some odds and everything else.
He should never argue with me about
football. He denies. He says, even though it's a live show, he says, I doctored the tape.
You should never argue with me about football.
All right, last question we're going to have time for. Next Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. pro team to win a title.
Brother.
Who's next? Joe, we'll start with you.
I think the next team that's going to win, and I'll go out on a limb, and it probably won't happen, but I would have to say the Nationals.
All right. That's a way out on a limb there, considering they're in for
it. I think they're good enough to win it if they put it together.
And Brian?
Ooh, wow. Can I go with the Mets?
Our cameraman likes the
D.C. team. D.C. team.
The Nationals. I like to call them the Nationals. I don't believe. Although another story, Bryce Harper. I worked in Vegas when he was in high school.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks so much. Yeah. We'll let you
good
go. So you have
us.
A 10 o'clock newscast to get
I
ready
do
for.
Have a 10 o'clock newscast.
We gotta have him on again. Sometime.
We hope so. Don't forget, next week we're gonna be out at Buffalo Wild Wings at Whitehall. We hope you come out for a live show next Thursday, starting at 7. Our thanks to Brian and all of our guests tonight. For Joe, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.